From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Thursday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Neil McCready in Chicago, actually. I said that just out of habit. I am in the Clark Ford Studio. Neil is in Chicago doing Cubs convention with Carson for a couple days from, I think the Sheridan is where he is today. We'll bring him in a second. Also, today we are talking to Jeffrey Wright. Pretty lengthy conversation with Jeffrey, mostly NFL, a few other things. As well as we have our typical Thursday morning chat with Mr. Wright prior to him doing the Jeff Calkins show. So podcast brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Get the lunch specials, get the bottomless refills in the Blue Sky location. And as we told you yesterday, February 3rd, Jamie Lynn Spears coming to Macomb, Craddock Oil and Blue Sky presenting sponsors for that. You can get tickets at eventbrite.com, so check those guys out. Plate lunches and more there at the Oxford Exxon. Daiquiris, as the temperature is a little higher than freezing, maybe a good time to get a little fix as those also six flavors or so. And as we tell you every single day, Clark Ford in Amory is the place to get your new car.
It is the place to get your new Ford vehicle. 662-257-1900 is the number. It's really simple. You call the number, you ask for Corey Clark, you tell Corey what new Ford you want. He sends you a quote within 15 minutes. And then it's up to you. You can make it complicated by shopping around and calling 8,000 dealers. If that makes you happy, it is your prerogative. Or you can let the people, your fellow listeners that have let Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You can take their word for it and join the list and get your new Ford. Enjoy a great vehicle, great service after the sale, and a really easy car buying experience. You make it even better. Tell Corey and the people at Clark Ford that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You get $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
So what's the plan today? What's the convention?
The convention starts tomorrow.
Okay.
We came up today because a year ago when we came up for like New Year's, Carson, as you know, plays a lot of soccer, and he wanted these really nice soccer cleats. And in a moment of weakness, I bought them. But the deal was, I said, you have to take care of them. If I ever see you not taking care of them, I'm never doing anything like this again. And a year later, not only is he taking care of them, he has taken immaculate care of them. So one of his big Christmas gifts was a Nike gift card for enough money to go out and buy a new pair of really nice soccer cleats. So we'll go to the Nike store today and probably try on 10 pairs of really expensive soccer cleats, and he'll pick one.
It's a good day for cars. Not bad.
Not bad. Yeah. He says he's getting his first Northwestern sweatshirt today.
I'm going to be curious to see what his dream is in 6 years. At 10 years old, the Northwestern dream's a good one. Maybe he'll follow it through. But I'll be curious to see how this moves forward over the years.
Oh, there's no question about it. There's no question. He's 11. He'll be 12 in October.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I know. Getting old, yeah. Man. It's unreal. But I don't know. It's interesting because I don't know. And this isn't to get on because I'm with you on the whole soccer thing. While soccer's growing, I don't know that it's growing at the rate that it's going to be there for him, like full college scholarships to play men's soccer in 6 years. I'm skeptical, but he's good at it. Appears to be good at it. People who know soccer tell me he's good at it. I have no idea. It's one of the and actually, Chase, it's one of the things that makes going to his soccer games fun. I have really no idea what I'm watching, so I just watch, and it's kind of pleasant.
You watch it at the most base level possible, which would be a very nice nice change.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I go to basketball and football games for a living and watch games knowing I have to write about them and trying to really understand them and watch at a minutia level so that you and I can talk about it for hours upon hours. And I go to his soccer games and I sit in the lawn chair or on a bleacher and just watch my kid run around. And I haven't really learned. I've learned a little about the game, obviously, over the years, but I don't study it. And I certainly don't keep up with it the way that he does, where he talks about different players that are going to transfer from this, from Bundesliga to whatever. And I just say, okay. And so it's, you know, he has this thing in his mind that he's going to play like Big Ten soccer in 6 or 7 years. And so I'm far be it for me to be the one that squashes his dreams. I'll encourage him if he's a strong enough student to get financial aid to a Big Ten school. I'm good.
Yeah, his Cubs fandom has dictated him reaching very high for an academic institution.
Exactly. So that's good. I mean, shoot for the stars, man. And I'm never going to be the guy that tells my kids, no, you're not going to be able to do that. You should try to do something much lower. I mean, why would I say that? So yeah, sure. If he wants to aspire to go to schools like Northwestern, I'm good with that.
Yeah, that's fair. A little Ole Miss and Saints activity yesterday. One in particular that I know you and I both incredibly happy for. Woodrow Hamilton getting moved to the Saints active roster. They're down a little on the defensive line. They moved Woody to their 53-man. He'll be in uniform when the Saints play the Vikings on Sunday afternoon in Minnesota.
You know, we get asked a lot. You both of us do, you know. How do you guys follow a program and not cheer for it or whatever? And it's a complicated answer. The easy answer that I always tell people, and you do too, I've heard you say it, is that you don't really cheer for teams anymore because you can't. And because it's complicated. But you cheer for people. And Woody's one of those people that you really cheer for. I mean, I know that Russell is the recruiting star, and I get it. He does better than I ever did at it. But there was a day that we did a lot of recruiting, you and me, and I did a lot on Woody Hamilton's recruiting. And from where Woody came from to playing in an NFL playoff game is a remarkable success story. And it is a story of perseverance and determination, and it's kind of like what we were just talking about with Carson. You know, if you had told Woody Hamilton 6-7 years ago, you're going to play in an NFL playoff game, I don't know that he could have even really believed that. I mean, he just didn't. There was a lot working against him as a young person, and for him to get to that place. You know, overshadowed in high school by Dante Moncrief, overshadowed in college by a lot of people, and just kind of kept working. And he's a really talented football player, and I just think it's a cool story. I hope that he sticks and has a long career. But he's one of those guys that I know Ole Miss people love him and all that stuff. But and I'm trying to do this without being critical. He's one of those guys that if reporters and writers and such were allowed a little more access, not to the stupid practices, but to the people, his story would have been told more often than it was. And it's a really good story.
Yeah, he was.
For the people who love college football, Chase, you know, who defend it and love it, I'm not critical of those people. I'm happy they exist. He's the poster child for what college football is. What makes college football great? Because if it's not for college football, he never gets the opportunities in life that he got. He's the poster child, not the big five-star kid with 8,000 offers. It's guys like him. That's the guy that you should hold up and go, this is why this sport needs to be defended and protected. Guys like him.
I think he was on practice squad last year, but he did. He got a ring with the Patriots even last year. He's got the chance to go 2-for-2 seasons to rings.
Yeah, I don't think he played in the playoffs last year.
No,
I think
he was active during the regular season, but then I think he got practice squatted for the playoffs.
I think that's right. And if I'm wrong, and if you're wrong, we apologize in advance. But I think that's right. I just think it's cool that he's just stuck with it, and I hope he finds a role where he can play and become a – I hope he has a long career. He's a great kid, I just think his is a really neat story. It's one of those – frankly, it's a failure on our part that we didn't – and when I say we, I don't mean just you and me. I just mean the media in general. That we didn't almost kind of insist on telling it, but I'm not whining. It's just it's where there's a flaw in the way that what college football has become with a lot of the in-house stuff and the paranoia that reigns over college football, that there are a lot of stories like that really just don't get told anymore.
Also, yesterday, the Saints activated Jeremy Liggins to their practice squad. It's a paycheck for Jeremy this week. I don't know that it means much from an NFL standpoint. I think it's at defensive tackle, but nonetheless, they have they've activated him to that spot as of yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, I can't even – it's hard to even contextualize the whole Jeremy Liggins story. I don't know how that would have worked out if he had always played a more natural position for someone his size.
I feel bad for his sake that he didn't just play one natural position the entire time just to see, because he was an athlete, just couldn't find anywhere to stick.
He was an elite athlete, and you always heard from people, even back to his Lafayette days. I always want to say Lafayette. Isn't that funny? Back to his Lafayette days, that he just didn't have the arm to be a quarterback at the next level. Yet, because he was so athletic, he made plays, and Lafayette was a dominant high school program with him at quarterback, and they just couldn't nobody could ever, because of the way the recruiting process works with with perception and reality, we talk about it all the time, the way that process worked, he wasn't going to go anywhere that wasn't going to play him at quarterback. And so he does that whole, he just bounced around, and you knew he was never going to be the quarterback. And, Ole Miss used him as a wildcat, for lack of a better word, and as a tight end some. And you just kind of always knew, whether it was offensive tackle or defensive tackle, that's what his body sort of dictated that he would do. And he just never really, through no one's fault necessarily, never really got that shot. And the fact that he's still picking up an NFL paycheck today tells you that the people at the highest level see the ability and the raw size and all that stuff. But I would guess that he's kind of behind the curve a little bit fundamentally and from a technical standpoint as a defensive lineman, because he hasn't played anywhere near as much as the guys who you're going to see on Sunday.
Two really good stories there with Liggins and Woody Hamilton. And then one that I'm just going to talk about this a little, because it's interesting probably to recruiting people. People remember him from the process. Remember Jaquel Green? D'Iberville signed maybe with LSU, if I remember that correctly, a few years ago.
The name rings a bell.
He signed a scholarship with UT San Antonio because he got dropped by everybody else. He got in trouble, now that I think about it. But he's on his fourth arrest since that point this week. I just see he was he's a suspect and was arrested in an armed home invasion in Jackson County this week. Just sad deal. Guy with tons of talent and just could not get out of his own way. Now four arrests.
That's not good. I saw where there was a kid in Alabama that was a three-star. I don't know whether it's in Rivals or whoever. He's a suspect in a homicide.
Oh, I missed this. I didn't see this.
Yeah, I need to go find it now. I just see the Jaquel thing. I'll have to look for it. I saw it just a little while ago.
Something that I didn't notice yesterday while we were on the podcast, so I'll repeat it here. Maybe a scheduling break for Ole Miss baseball. I put a story up yesterday about Ryan Rollison getting first-team All-American honors, and also Ole Miss being ranked 11th, as we talked about on the show yesterday. But as I dug into it a little bit, seven SEC teams ranked, and they miss both teams from the SEC East that are among those rankings. There's five West teams ranked, two East teams ranked, and they don't play Florida or Kentucky. So potentially a pretty good break for the Rebels.
And you know this because you cover the sport, and sometimes the difference between being really good and being great is just a little luck. And it's that's the stuff that's uncontrollable and unpredictable. Just
yeah,
a little luck.
A weekend at home against Tennessee versus a weekend on the road against Florida is easily the difference in 17 or 14 wins or something in a whole different environment, isn't it?
Or the difference between 20 and 18, and the difference between being a national seed and just a regional host. It's
in the tournament or a coach fired, even. I mean,
yeah. I mean, when you put, and we'll do it. I mean, we'll do it with football. We'll do it 1,000 times between now and the first Saturday in September. We will do win, loss, loss, win, win, loss on 8,000 teams. And at no point will we say, well, who gets hurt? Does a team have a sickness run through them? Is there a tragedy that befalls a team or brings a team? There's so many variables, and then schedule luck. You know, does Penn State get lucky the week they play Ohio State that Ohio State's quarterback yanks his hamstring and can't go, and so they play the backup and win a game that they otherwise would have lost, and therefore win the Big Ten? And it's that you can't predict that stuff, and so it's part of what makes sports fun, but there's luck involved. If you're going to be great and win a title, you have to have a lot of things that you can control, but you gotta have some luck go your way too. And that's the stuff that you can't control and you can't predict, and you're at its mercy.
Well, it's like it probably gets tons of clicks, but you know, you've got the way too early top 25s for next year, and talk about throwing some darts at a dartboard. I mean, who knows at that point?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't even know yet who
transfers in and out, who's showing. Oh.
Who's going to declare for the draft even? They still have a few days. You know, we didn't talk about it. Drew Locke staying for his senior year. It surprised me a little bit.
He avoided that class, though.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably the smart move, but – you know, I had Neil Stratton on the Beer Garden, and we were talking about Locke, and there's some NFL people that thought he could fall. I mean, he could go, you know, late first round even. So, you know, I think he probably made a really good decision, but that changes the landscape of the East kind of considerably. Outside of Georgia, they've got as good a chance as anybody to compete on that side because of his presence.
My guess is they're 3-0. Got a road game in there, but 3-0 potentially headed to Georgia next season on September the 22nd. Then they got a bye week. Now, it's tough right there, though. This is what's funny. This is an interesting Missouri schedule. I don't know why we're talking about this, but we are. They open with UT Martin, then play Wyoming that doesn't have Josh Allen, so that's two wins. They go to Purdue. Jeff Brohm, a good coach, tough game. Purdue kicked the crap out of them this season, but it was early before they kind of caught some traction. Then they play Georgia, at South Carolina, at Alabama, 3 in a row.
Ooh.
Could be 2-4, 3-3. Could be a pretty good team and be 3-3. Follow that up with Memphis, who knows? Kentucky, at Florida. Ooh.
Yeah, that schedule could go a million different directions, couldn't it?
Yeah, finish at Tennessee and Arkansas, but
I like Odom, and I think Locke's really good. They would.
Here's the catch. They got hot. They did not beat a single team with a winning record. Not one.
No, they didn't. But who in the East next year do you look at besides Georgia, obviously? Do you look at and go, boy, they, no doubt about it, they're going to be awesome.
Well, no, it's the only awesome, but I think Carolina's can be very good.
Well, I do think Carolina, that's a good point. I do think Carolina can be very good.
And Carolina can win 8 games.
You know what? And as much as we talk about bowl games being meaningless, and for the most part they are, they can be kind of building blocks with the right coaching staff. And I think for Carolina and Will's personality, I think that second half against Michigan in the, I think the Outback Bowl, I think that's going to be a building block for them. It's going to give them some confidence and be something that they can build on. Not like a big giant springboard, but a nice step.
Yeah, I agree with that. We'll go to Jeffrey in a second and talk to him. Before we do that, I'll tell you the podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also a leader in condo financing in Oxford. So ask Jason about the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLO, that's JLOWE, at communitymtg.com.
Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. But did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, Romero challenges you to give him a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give him a call, go to Google, read Romero Miller State Farm reviews. And then if you have insurance needs in Tennessee or Mississippi, give Romero a call. It's Romero Miller State Farm, 662-893-1212. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high ticket product or service such as HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, that kind of thing, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580. They will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800.
Now, Jeffrey Wright on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Jeffrey, welcome. They've made some moves, maybe some more potential moves since the last time we have spoken on this here podcast. Your New York football Giants have hired Dave Gettleman as general manager. He started cleaning house pretty much immediately, and then it looks like Matt Patricia is the leader in the clubhouse for the head coach job. Your thoughts on, I guess, Patricia in the last week or so?
I'm good with Patricia. I think that Dave Gettleman is subtly a genius, because I think one of the greatest moves he's did so far since being named the general manager is he leaked out Jim Schwartz's name as the leader in the clubhouse and kind of the more or less the hire to be. And that kind of caused everyone with a brain to be like, oh my God, no, no, no. And so basically anything that wasn't Jim Schwartz afterwards was going to be a win. I'm good with Patricia. I think I would probably prefer an offensive guy only from this perspective. I think if you hire truly the offensive guy, I think there are a few more coordinators out there that have proven that they can have really strong defenses. If you yourself are the offensive guy and you just let them run the defense, I think that seems to have worked a little better. Although with Patricia, he's not a retread. So plus. He is, by all accounts, he's Belichick's kind of like prodigal chosen one. So, okay, good. My only problem with Patricia is Patricia's a stoolie. And by that, I mean he's a Barstool fan. And I don't know if I want my football coach being like me. Like, I want my football coach not having free time and not wasting
time. Yeah, you want your football coach a lot like you want your brain surgeon. The best in the business, I know he's better than me. He is not me.
Yeah, I don't want him having a sense of humor. I don't really want him to have like any personality. Like Belichick doesn't have personality.
Is Belichick disciple the same as Saban disciple though? Are we worried that just chip off old block is not the block?
I'm worried it's worse.
Okay.
Because we've seen even fewer.
I mean, what do we
at
have
least,
so far?
Like,
Josh McDaniel? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of how it came down to me. It's like, I was cool with him getting Josh McDaniels. It's like, well, I should be just as cool as them getting Patricia because, like, we do have a track record in McDaniels. McDaniels isn't a rousing success story. So, yeah, let's see. We have Romeo Crennel, Josh McDaniels. Who were the other? The man genius. Although I do think that we have to kind of start maybe considering that Cleveland coaches' records, like we have to start grading them on the Cleveland curve, like 9-10 wins for Mark Mangini in Cleveland, like maybe that should be considered like 11 wins at a decent job.
Your Belichick coaching tree, he has had 7 assistants become NFL head coaches. Those are Romeo Crennel, Al Groh, Josh McDaniels, Eric Mangini, Nick Saban, obviously, Jim Schwartz, and Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, like that kind of proves that maybe the genius of Belichick is Belichick, although by all accounts, Patricia is, like, I was reading Eric Edholm's story yesterday that was really, really good. It's like, you know, when it comes to Patricia, like, he has as much faith in Patricia as he's had really in anyone else. And, like, even when you go with, like, Eric Mangini, a guy that he once upon a time was very, very high on, you know, he wasn't pushing for him after year one of his being the defensive coordinator. He really wasn't pushing for him to get jobs. And you could tell at this point, like, he thinks Patricia has earned the right. So we'll see. I mean, like, I would much rather do this than do, you know, some type of retread, you know, the Jim Caldwell experiment. Like, I'd much rather do this. Like, I am a much bigger believer on take the chance on a Matt Patricia, Sean McVay, take the shot in case you do find the right guy. Because the right guy is hard to find, and just finding another retread time and time again has proved not to be an effective way to build a franchise. I do think the one good thing that we've seen this year from the NFL is, see if you agree with this, Chase.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think we're closer and closer to the days in which the John Foxes of the world cannot be head coach anymore?
Yeah, no, there's been a change there just because of the lack of production, because it's a retread league, but it's also a very, very expensive league with lots of money and a business. So, yes, the retreads are going to be pushed out at some point. And it's because of the success, too, of like a Sean McVay. It works. Everybody goes, well, okay, now that's the copycat we're going to do instead of the other thing. Yeah, it's a copycat league, but now that that's working, that's what we're going to copycat. You know, maybe Patricia works. Maybe this happens, this happens, this happens. No, I absolutely think that's right because, you know, you look at it, and something you pointed out a minute ago, the big thing with Patricia, though, is that defensive thing, because even, especially at the college level, but the NFL level, too, it has been, I hate to say proven, but the trend is that you have more success, or quicker success at least, getting the offensive mind coach to find the defensive coordinator versus vice versa, because offense and quarterback play in the NFL to such importance, I kind of feel like you've got to hit 2 home runs there versus maybe 1 the other direction.
Yes, I think that's kind of the deal. It's like, well, how can Wade Phillips be such a good defensive coordinator, not a good head coach? It's like, well, you know, when you're the head coach, you got to run the offense too. And instead of maybe having one area of expertise, you now really have to at least have 2, or at least you have to be able to identify someone that does. So that makes it complicated. I wish we'd stop calling it a copycat league. Okay. I wish we'd call it what it is. It's a stupid league. Like, think about this. Carson Wentz, big, tall guy, goes to a small school, has all the physical gifts, and he's having success early.
Josh Allen, thanks.
Enter Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, they're stupid. Like, that's what they are. Like, it's largely the same group of families that have all been rich their whole lives, that have owned these franchises, and they all kind of operate in this one way. And so we start seeing, like, it's not so much that they're a copycat, they're just stupid.
No, not even stupid. It's scared and it's safe because Wentz allowed Allen to be socially acceptable to be drafted where he's likely going to get drafted. The retreads are guys that other people have hired, so I can hire them too. It's a lot like we talked about several months ago with head coaches in college. The AD can make the hire of the, you know, Tubby Smith at Memphis, for example, sure. Or whomever we're talking about. You know, Herm Edwards at Arizona State or something like that, where they go, hey, I like this guy, and these 40 and 50 and 60-year-old boosters really like this guy. It's safe. It lets them keep their job, and when it doesn't work, they just shrug their shoulders because all the decision-makers are all on the same page that, hey, we liked him, let's move on to the next guy.
Yeah, and it's part of the reason why, like, I do understand Gruden. I do understand that Gruden is maybe more of a marketing tactic than he is a football tactic. But in fairness to Gruden, the two jobs that he's had, the Oakland Raiders job and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers job, his head coaching record at both jobs is better than the average record at both jobs. He's about one win better at the Raiders, and he was two wins better at the Buccaneers. So I know, like, everyone loves to throw out the Tampa Bay, or whatever, I'm sorry, I beg your pardon, Oakland just spent $10 million a season on Brian Billick. Well, Brian Billick had the Ravens job. And how many people, by the way, since Gruden left the Raiders have won a Super Bowl, Chase?
Yeah, not so much.
How many people since Gruden left the Bucs have won a Super Bowl?
Yeah. I know. Okay, I mean, like, by that definition, though, Tom Benson should just give Sean Payton his entire will when he dies.
Which I'm cool with.
Okay, fair enough.
Hold on. Are you not?
No, I am. I'm just saying, if the market value is that dictation, Sean Payton suddenly is worth $250 million over 10 years.
But in fairness, Sean Payton has a job. Like, the number one time at which you are the most, like, marketable from your own view, from a money standpoint, is when you're available. Like, when people want to hire you. Like, it's like, you know, when you're hopping from one job to another, that's usually when you get the pay bump because you have a gig. Like,
yeah,
and in fairness,
had something really dumb happened and the Saints had fired Peyton in the middle of Bounty Gate, he would have gotten a huge contract from someone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it would have been, and in fairness to Gruden, there is a reason why about that Friday right before, I think it was the Friday right before week 17 that the Buccaneers announced they were keeping Dirk Cotter.
Yeah.
It's because Gruden was bidding Tampa and Oakland against each other, and that's how he wound up with $10 million.
Funny. I'm sure it's funny that's point, the two franchises, but anyway.
But I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, both. I mean, one franchise that traded him, and then another franchise that fired him. Yeah. So, but I mean, that is kind of how that works. Like, he found the two franchises that were dumb enough to sit there and get into a bidding war with each other, and he winds up with $10 million. Like, I don't begrudge him.
What are you seeing this weekend? We'll start Atlanta at Philadelphia. Lincoln Financial Field, and what looks like pretty rough weather on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I just don't know how any way imaginable that you can bet on Nick Foles. I just don't. Like, he's Nick Foles, like, for a reason.
Okay.
And
go ahead, then I'll stop you.
Well, I mean, like, he's watching film of, like, when he was good under Chip Kelly, like, That reminds me of, like, Sam Darnold doing the move where he used to screenshot Tom Brady, like, bad games and Romo bad games so that he could convince himself that even good quarterbacks have bad days. So, like, that's just kind of sad and pathetic to me. And so I would lay the three there.
It's a Sophie's choice for me in a way. Do I... Smartly, in a way, I go, hey, pull for Atlanta in case New Orleans wins because it gets back in the dome, a home game, and the Saints, I feel like, are better than the Falcons. However, Nick Foles in an NFC title game is also a thing that I really kind of feel good about, especially since the Saints can run the ball a little bit. Who do I root for in this game?
I think you have to root for Philly.
Okay.
Because I think the only team that is as scary from top to bottom as the Saints right now is the Falcons.
Okay.
I got to be honest with you, Chase, and I know your brother, one of my best friends, we were watching that game, you know, with his eyes. How impressive was the tackling performance that the Falcons put on that night?
It was. It had to be, and I kind of left Dylan alone after a certain point that night.
Yeah, I let him text me. By the way, he was not prepared for playoff football.
No, he had no experience, and he was wide-eyed for that experience.
So, I mean, like, when the last time your team played in the playoffs, you were, what, in, like, fourth grade, third grade, something like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are not ready. And
he'll be in better condition next year when they win the West again, and it's whatever.
Well, it is what I told him. I go, listen, you've got a decade of this. I'm not saying every single year your team's going to win your division, but you've got a
Your window is going to be at least somewhat open through 2025.
Right. That was what I was telling him. I was like, you got to learn, like, this sucks, but this is what it is.
You go through all this miserable for that 1 year where it all works out. That's what you're. It is what it is. Yeah. So.
Yes. By the way, when that year happens, you don't stop celebrating.
Yeah. Take a break in our talk with Jeffrey to tell you the podcast brought to you in part from Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com. They've got the Sildenafil. I saw a post on the board yesterday. Somebody asking about it, and you can ask for it directly online there at Tyson Drugs. Fill out the form. They'll get in touch with you, and when they do, just give me the doctor's name. They'll call the doctor. They'll get everything set up and even deliver it to you if you're not local. Great price there for the same length of effectiveness as those other guys that are more expensive. So TysonDrugs.com, 662-252-2321.
The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan is the place to go. I've done it several times. I can't recommend them highly enough. Gene and Sandy Grass, the owners of that dealership, great friends of this site, of this podcast, and they have a fantastic dealership. Go in, check out the new 2018s, the new Armada, the new Pathfinder. It's really cool. If you're in the market for a previously owned Nissan, you get great deals there. If they don't have it, they'll find it. Great lease deals, I tell you all the time. Tremendous service after the sale is tremendous. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. We're also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site, harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab up at the top left. You can filter through by what you're looking for. There's a whole lot going on in real estate in Oxford, a whole lot. And you can find out what's a good deal for you and a good deal for you now and down the road at Harry's site, and send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Now back to Chase's interview with Jeffrey Wright on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
Yeah. Oh, I know. The tackling was great. They're scary. I mean, they scare the crap out of me. I'll be honest. They're talented in a lot of different ways. I mean, they're really, really good. The Rams, though, did not play well. So that's what makes me step back a little and go, I've watched the Saints kind of dictate the game against the Falcons twice. If anything impressed me, it wasn't even necessarily the game against L.A. It was Atlanta, what they did to Carolina in a game that Carolina had to win in Week 17.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I do agree with you. I think if Farrah Cooper, who's been a Pro Bowler this year in the return game, just hangs on to the football, that is a different game for sure. I just didn't like how Goff never looked comfortable. They got away from Gurley fast. Now, in fairness, they got away from Gurley really fast because they started off with their normal game plan, and it was like three and out, three and out, three and out. And so at a certain point, I think they said, okay, well, we've got to get some first downs to hold on to, like, just to hold on to the football because our defense was on the field. What I thought was impressive is the fact that even though the Rams' defensive line was largely just taking it to the Falcons, they still found enough ways to move the football. Like, they weren't putting up touchdowns every drive, but they were able to put together those two or three drives they needed when they needed to do them. And that's what I thought that was impressive.
Well, I'll give him credit. What I thought was impressive about that was that Matt Ryan looked like Drew Brees from the standpoint of moving inside the pocket. Aaron Donald got pressure all night long, but Ryan did the little shifts, the shoulder shifts, the couple shuffles with the feet. He did so many Breeze-like things in the pocket to keep plays going, to let receivers finish routes. So he was really good. I'm going to root for Philadelphia. And I tell you, though, I think I'm doing it, and we'll stay with the NFC to do this, because I really feel like the Saints are kind of behind the eight ball here. I think Minnesota wins that game on Sunday night.
Ooh.
Saints are banged up.
I disagree, but it could be because, you know, I believe in the Saints, and I'm not the guy that thinks like, oh, you know, overlooks Minnesota. I just always revert back to
you take quarterbacks.
Chase, this is usually the week where this is almost always the week where the better quarterback wins. Always.
Minnesota is just so scary defensively that they have me very, very, very freaked out.
I understand. And my whole deal is, can you believe that Minnesota, New Orleans was week one?
Well, Bradford was the quarterback. Adrian Peterson was the Saints' leading rusher that night.
Yep.
It's two different teams. I mean, if you told me, hey, this is a potential NFC title game, I would never have believed you, because the Saints went 0-2 after losing to the Patriots in the second week.
Yes, that's right.
Minnesota is going to stop the run. I think more so than anybody, maybe other than Carolina last week. Minnesota really good in that front seven, where I think they're going to step up and actually make Breeze beat them, whereas so many teams in the past during the regular season have kind of laid back, protected against Breeze, and let the Saints try to run it and get them into third down. I think Minnesota's going to step up, and it's going to look like last week, where Breeze is going to have to take the top off the coverage with, you know, frankly, other than Mike Thomas, just kind of some pedestrian receivers.
Yeah, you're at that point, you're betting on whether or not Ted Ginn decides to actually catch it if it hits him in the hands, which is always a scary proposition.
He is a fast son of a gun, though.
Holy cow, still. Yeah. Like, it's like him and Mike Wallace, like guys that kept a job only because they're fast. Like, literally, that's the only reason they've kept jobs.
I told Neil this yesterday off air. So Kara walks in the other night, and she goes, hey, Sunday night, 6:30 dinner reservation okay?
I'm just kinda, no.
I just kind of looked at her. I was like, 7:30 might be, depending on the score in my frame of mind. I don't know. Can't really commit to that right now. Sorry.
Gotta
have a little more understanding of the situation there. That was a fail. But
I will say this, though. Didn't you think last week was extremely encouraging for the Saints? Because that was more or less kind of what the Panthers did. They're like, we're not letting Kamara and Ingram get going, and we're going to make Breeze make plays. And guess what? He made plays. He threw for, what, 350?
He was fantastic.
He's still the most fun quarterback to watch. I don't care. Like, you know how I feel about Aaron Rodgers. I still would rather watch Drew Brees play, even at 38 or whatever he is.
He wins a second ring. Is he right there with Rodgers?
I put him ahead of Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, he's done it. He is in a dome. He's got Sean Payton. He's done it for longer with, frankly, less talent.
Rodgers, at this point, if you're making that comparison, Rodgers is more eye test than, like, resume test.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness to Rodgers, Mike McCarthy versus Sean Payton is a bloodbath.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, I don't think Vegas would put that on the board. Like, I do not understand. What were the... Like, if you're the Packers, what are you doing getting rid of Ted Thompson and keeping McCarthy? Like, for a franchise that has never had the ability to sign free agents and whatnot, like, they have consistently always drafted better than their peers. What are you doing getting rid of Ted Thompson and acting like that Thompson's the problem and not McCarthy?
Safe. Back to the original thing. That's the answer. I mean, it was safe.
All you need to know is bet on the Packers just once or twice, and you tell me whether or not you think Mike McCarthy's a good football coach.
No, I know. You hit the point, though. Being emotional and a Saints fan, I'm so scared of the Vikings defense. Now, in saying that, going into the playoffs, just watching games with no emotional attachment, I get Sean Payton and Drew Brees against Case Keenum and Mike Zimmer.
Yes. Now, I also do think Zimmer's a good coach. Like, whenever our compatriots in this business like to point out minority coaches that don't get a chance,
yeah,
I always throw back Mike Zimmer in their face. Think how many jobs Mike Zimmer was consistently passed up for, like, time and time again, when it was clearly obvious that guy deserved a shot. And then he finally gets the Vikings gig, and he's been pretty good. But the biggest deal is, it's Case Keenum. Like, and I know Latavius Murray, and I know that the Vikings have done a really nice job of running the football, and you can't take anything away from what Keenum's done this year. But there have been lots of quarterbacks that have kind of had that regular season moment. And then when it gets this time, they can't get it done, and that's what I'm banking on this week.
Vikings 0-1 in the playoffs under Zimmer. Case Keenum making his first start. It's not exactly Drew Brees' first start. And in the one game that Zimmer coached in the playoffs, they only scored 9 points a couple years ago.
In fairness, though, that was that
they played the Seattle team that was pretty dang good.
Well, and that was the game that was, like, I believe the temperature at kickoff was 2. Yeah, literally,
it was in Minneapolis, but it was outdoors, right?
Yeah, it was at the college stadium. It was the kick that Blair Walsh missed the kick from like 29 yards.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Okay.
Which was huge for me because I had like a four team money line parlay going, one of which was obviously Seattle, and I was like, that was my only loss. Like I was chalking that up as the only loss. And then heroically, Blair Walsh just came through in the clutch.
Game weather, -6 at kickoff with a -12 wind chill.
Yes.
That would have been
a game where I would have written in my contract that I don't have to play.
That's great. Also in a dome, so Breeze gets to stay indoors for this
one. And they're not going to, you know, so that stadium has these really big window panes at one of the ends of the field that they can open up.
They're going to close it. It's all that.
They're going to close it. Because not because of game weather or whatnot, because they're legitimately afraid the pipes might freeze.
Oh, is that the reason?
Yes.
If you're Minnesota, though, don't you open it anyway and just let the pipes freeze?
I bet you can't because you're hosting the Super Bowl.
Ooh, don't have time.
And you can't afford any
Fix
type
say,
of
if you weren't ball. Hosting the Super Bowl and Philadelphia won on Saturday.
I'm opening those bad boys up.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right, we agree New England's going to kick the crap out of Tennessee on Saturday night, and I think Jacksonville beats Pittsburgh Sunday morning.
See, I don't. What are the odds that Roethlisberger plays that badly again?
I love Jacksonville's defense. Love them.
I agree, and as a card-carrying member of the Blake Bortles Wikipedia Reading Club, like, yeah. Again, huge. Like, we cannot stress enough how efficient Blake played on Saturday or on Sunday. Like, I can't see them scoring enough to keep up with Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown. I don't see that.
Okay.
I mean, think about this, man. As good as Jacksonville was, Tyrod Taylor still had opportunities to make plays to win that game. And I think that the odds are overwhelming that Big Ben will make a few of those plays. Whereas Tyrod Taylor did.
So you think the Saints are the only Vegas upset on the weekend?
Yes. I believe if you go back like the last 3 or 4 years, I think favorites are 9-12 this week. 9 of 12 this week.
Really?
Yeah, I think they've won 9 of the last 12. And I'm not one, I think one and covered.
Yeah. Interesting.
This is a big for the gamblers out there. This is a big what I would call a dummy special weekend. Favorites and overs hit this weekend, which is great for the public, which is usually bad for Vegas.
Why the overs?
Usually when favorites win, the over hits.
Oh, okay.
If favorites cover, usually the over hits.
No, I understand what you mean. Hadn't really talked since Monday going into next season, whatever. Does Kirby keep this momentum?
I want to ask you this because it's a little bit different of a market.
Mm-hmm.
Did it not seem to you like more people than not were rooting for Alabama?
Well, we talked to Jay Tate yesterday, and he said his message board was rooting for Alabama higher than he ever thought. He thought it'd be 0%, and he said about 35 to 40% of his message board was rooting for Alabama.
What do we think that is? Is that, like, because I was discussing with a buddy, he's like, well, Kirby rubs people the wrong way, and I was like, how? He doesn't really do anything. Like, it's not like he's in your face in the media. Anytime they put a microphone in front of him, he puts over the other team, like, as much as humanly possible. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, that was strange to me.
I'm gonna predict it this way. Maybe that if you're a fan of another SEC program, you know Alabama's always gonna be there. And as long as Saban's there, that's a guarantee. Alabama winning kept Georgia from taking that extra little step. And everything you can do to keep the other 13 teams down a little bit is a positive because Alabama's the given. So if you can do anything to harm somebody else, maybe that's the way to go. Because at this point, while you've got fatigue, you're comfortable with Alabama being there.
I do also think there's been an element of what has occurred with the Patriots for most people that like have brains. When everyone like wants to point out Patriots are cheaters, and you're like, well, let's see. The Falcons were pumping in crowd noise. The Browns were communicating with their front office to their coaching staff during the games, which is about as big of a no-no as possible. The Giants were radioing in plays from a walkie-talkie. Maybe it turns out that football coaches just in general try to get advantages. Like, and then everyone kind of just like brushed that aside and just like, you know what? The Patriots are doing the same things that everyone else is, and they're just doing it better. So there's kind of that air of respect. I'm wondering if that's starting to occur with Alabama, where everyone's just like, you know what? They just do it better than us. And so you kind of tip your cap to them. But what I thought was super strange was, I know like why I was pulling for Alabama, because I bet on them. Like, and I was sitting there watching Twitter, and I was like, there are not this many degenerates like out there. Like, I know good degenerates. These people aren't degenerates. And it was weird. And then I started wondering, was it because Papanastas missed the field goal so badly that then people didn't want him to be the reason why they lost? Like,
well, they
like
also that? Wanted a good game. So once Alabama got behind, there started to be a Crimson Tide cheer going on just to make the game closer and entertaining.
Yes, and then when it got to overtime, everyone's like, okay, well, let's just see. And then
we got to pick somebody at this point, so whatever. Quickly on another thing, Philadelphia currently is a 3-point underdog at home against Atlanta. New England is a 13-point favorite at home against Tennessee. Pittsburgh is a touchdown favorite at home against Jacksonville. And then the Saints are getting 5 currently in Minnesota.
So I want Saints money line. I want Falcons money line.
Yep.
And then I want Pittsburgh. So I want the money lines in the NFC, and I want to lay them in the AFC.
You'd lay the 13?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You think it's a route?
I feel good about that.
Okay.
I think, can we talk, okay, because you know Seth Wickersham, and you know that I respect Seth's work, and so I don't think anything that Seth did in that was unprofessional by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I thought that entire story proved just how talented Seth was, because when you were reading that story, you're like, good God, this guy can write. Like, the visuals, everything, like, it placed you right there in the moment. You're like, this guy can write. And I thought it's not like he was making it up. It's like, obviously someone told him this and this was reported. But didn't you find yourself going, what's the story here? Three guys that have been massively successful for 2 decades might have some ego.
Yeah. When you step back, you know, when I talked about this the other day, when you step back from it, you kind of just go, duh. They have such success that, of course, there's going to be this whatever after this longest period of time. Because here's the deal. Seth wrote that so well that even though he caught a lot of criticism, so many people went, hey, that's really well reported. We know Seth. He didn't make it up. It's written spectacularly. That story gets eviscerated publicly if anybody else almost writes that. Almost
yes,
anyone. It's killed.
I do agree with that. Because there's...
Seth kept it from being a dumb moment for the most majority of people that read it, because they were so caught up in his words that they didn't take a step back to use a little bit of common sense and go, well, of course that's the situation.
Here were two moments that really drove me insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I use these two moments because they were reported moments. The first moment was the play where Kevin Hogan gets hurt. And he sets it up brilliantly. About how you've had the sideline discussion, and then Brady has a chance to throw the touchdown pass on the deep post that will end the game. Instead, he immediately checks it down to Hogan, and Hogan gets hurt on the play. Does he realize that quarterbacks don't bat 1,000 on the right read? And he's not the first quarterback that kind of got hit throughout the day that might have gotten rid of the football a little bit sooner than probably he should have.
If I have a criticism for the story, because while I credited it for how well the writing was, is that anecdotes in that type of story leave so much nuance and context out that, frankly, they're unfair to the people in the anecdote.
Well, and the other biggest this would be like one criticism that I would actually like if Seth and I were having a conversation, like the one thing I would say to his face. If someone tells you that Brady has been slipping, you cannot take that as fact. You cannot simply report that as fact and operate under that assumption, because the statistics do not support the claim that Brady is slipping. Brady in his last 10 seasons threw the ball farther in the air than any other year, and he had his second best completion percentage. And if you just want to go yards per attempt, he had his best yards per attempt ever or in the last 10 seasons and his second best completion percentage. That's not slipping.
That's a Chad Kelly stat. You always like that yards through the air with Kelly.
Right, because that's the hardest throw to make. The farther you throw it, it's the same thing. Like it'd be like, Chase, it's in baseball, tracking guys that throw people out from 90 feet versus guys that throw people out from 200 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a harder, it's a more difficult play to make. So, like, it's just not true that he's slipping. Like, that's the thing that's insane is the fact that it's the same thing that drove me crazy about people acting like Breeze had a bad year this year. Breeze set an NFL record for completion percentage, and he set a career mark in yards per attempt. He didn't slip. They had a running game, so he wasn't forced to do as much.
Yeah, he threw tons fewer passes than some past seasons. That's the only stat that was really relevant from a different standpoint.
I laughed how like everyone was acting like he had a bad year. That on Sunday he just eviscerated Carolina.
Yeah, he's giving me at least some hope. So we'll see who's on the show today.
So I basically am going to be on the air from 9 till 4 today.
Oh, good.
At some fashion or another. So on the Jeff Calkins show today, we'll have Steve White. We'll also be discussing all of this on the NFL. Chris Arrington will join us to discuss the Grizzlies with just a crushing win last night over the Pelicans.
Saw that.
An absolutely devastating win for draft positioning. And then Steve Kyler, who covers the NBA draft, will join us. And then on, I'll be producing Jason and John. We have 3 hours of content. The Fizdales are going to join us for an entire hour. That is okay. David and Natasha Fizdale will join us. And then on the Eric Hasselstein show, we'll have Ryan Glassbiegel. On the Eric Hasselstein show, we'll have Ryan Glassbiegel of the Big Lead as well as Eric. And should be a full day here at 92.9 FM ESPN.
And when you get off the air, you've got primetime golf. Who's winning the Sony Open?
I'll give you my sleeper.
Okay.
I'll give you... I weirdly like Kisner. Is that wrong?
It's not wrong. I took him this week in our fantasy. The other one is if you can get him for good odds in a top 10, I love Chucky Three Sticks.
Yep, Chucky Three Sticks. Cam Smith is always a decent play at places like this. And if you're looking for like real long shots, Jamie Lovemark.
And I know he's won there twice. Stay the hell away from Jimmy Walker.
Yeah. Stay away from Jimmy Walker. And then, I mean, if you want to bet on him, by all means, I just have a little thing I like to call dignity. I mean, Zach Johnson's always a good play here because it's kind of a Zach Johnson type course.
Yeah.
Patience pays off.
He's falling off now. Zach's done. It's not the Zach of 3 or 4 years ago.
I mean, he did go through an equipment change, and usually that takes guys about a year.
Yeah. Maybe so.
I mean,
we're going to say all this, and then Spieth's going to win by 8, and it's going to be whatever. But
man, I don't know. You gotta drive it straighter than he does here.
Buy or sell Justin Thomas this week. Last thing, I gotta go. Bones on the bag. Played mediocre at best last week at Kapalua.
Sell. Same thing. He's hitting too many foul balls with a driver right now.
Okay, not the good course for that. All right, we'll talk to you next week, Jeffrey.
All right, man.
Thanks to Jeffrey every Thursday morning. You can hear his thoughts here on the Oxford Exxon podcast, a podcast that's brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, full-service lawn maintenance landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. Get that free quote from MasterCuts by calling them at 662-607-7773 or going to MasterCutsLawn.com. It's cold outside, grass isn't growing right now, but it will be soon, and you can go ahead and take care of that. Sign the contract, mention the podcast. First cut is free when you do those things. Outdoor living areas, kitchens, and more there with Master Cuts. Again, 662-607-7773.
The podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home and all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, without a 5-minute wait. OUB is offering 1-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield and 3-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With that 3-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's 3-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Ole Miss and Florida, Saturday at the Pavilion. That game is at noon, a big game for both teams, certainly a huge game for Ole Miss. Tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com.
Florida with a win last night against Mississippi State. Is that right?
I think that is right.
Yeah, Florida at home beats Mississippi State 71-54 last night in Gainesville. Florida
the shocking
now,
story. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, you're fine. Florida now 12-4 on the season.
Yeah, they're off to a really good start in the league. The shocking score last night, I mean, it was a shocker.
LSU.
LSU beat the shorts off Arkansas.
In Fayetteville, right?
Yeah, I think so. It just beat them. Beat the heck out of it. No one saw that coming. No one saw that coming.
A&M 0-4. They're hurt. A couple guys out. Somebody's got the flu or something, but 0-4 in the league.
Yeah, I mean, along the lines of what we said a minute ago, injuries are going to happen. They're going to happen to everybody. Sickness is going to happen. It happens to everybody. It's an excuse, but it's not an excuse. LSU 75-54. You're right, Chase. It was in Fayetteville. 21-point loss at home for Arkansas in a game that you talk about a resume killer. Man.
Maybe LSU's just better than you think.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. This is why
everybody's just in the middle. Nobody's great. Everybody's just okay to good.
Nobody's great and nobody's horrible.
No.
And in the league, usually, and look, this is, I always feel like I'm talking down to people when I say this. I'm talking down to myself. I'm used to, you're used to, we're all used to an SEC where there's a great Kentucky team, a couple of really good teams under Kentucky, and then 4 or 5 teams at the bottom that are just abysmal, where you watch them and go, how the hell is that team in the SEC? You don't have any of that this year. You don't have a great Kentucky team. They're good and they're talented, but they're different. You don't have any other great teams. You have a handful of solid teams, and then you have this middle ground of teams, Arkansas, Alabama, teams like that, that can be really good one night and not so good another night, but they're talented. And the teams that are at the, quote, bottom of the league right now, it's like South Carolina and Ole Miss and Tennessee and some teams. Those teams are perfectly capable of beating really anyone in the league or losing to anyone in the league. And that hasn't been the case. It just hasn't been the case in years past. It's the first time in a long time, and it's going to make the SEC tournament interesting on a small level, but what's really going to be interesting is how the committee sorts through SEC teams at the end of the year. Because I think a lot of the records are going to look the same. I think a lot of the RPIs are going to be roughly the same. And they're going to have to sort through resumes inside this league in a way that they haven't had to do in the past where it was kind of easy.
It's a manufactured storyline. Four writers gave UCF a number one vote in the AP poll. The Golden Knights ended up finishing sixth. Obviously, Alabama got the other 57. Other than the four that UCF got, major problem with it or no?
No, I don't have a major problem.
Well, that's the wrong word. Agree with it or no?
No, I wasn't directing that at you. I was just saying, you know, it's sports, and if you think UCF's the best team, okay. But that's Riders being cute or having an agenda, which I don't like. You know, you and I never really talk about this. This whole Riders voting on stuff is becoming a problem because people bring their agendas into it. We've all sort of agreed to this playoff system the way that it is right now. Alabama won that playoff. If you have a vote, you vote for the team that won that playoff. Now, if you want to vote, you want to be cute and vote UCF 3, okay. And I might have done that had I had a ballot.
Yeah, I have no problem with that at all.
In fact, the more I think about it, and I'm thinking about it for 10 seconds, that's literally the amount of time that I'm talking about here. My final ballot, had I been an AP voter, and I won't be because I can't because I'm so biased, I would have voted Alabama 1, Georgia 2, and I would have voted UCF 3.
Yeah, there's no obligation for the AP voters to accept that the playoff system is whatever. But at the same time, yeah, it's implied that that is our method. I mean, come on. The four that did it, Ryan Aber of the Oklahoman in Oklahoma City, he basically said that he did the entire year based off who beat who, and since Alabama lost to the team that UCF beat, that made the number one. Ed somebody of the Republican American in Waterbury, Connecticut, said that he did it simply because of the transitive property. Good job, Ed. Proud of you. Freedom fighting. Safeed Dean of the Orlando Sentinel. That one does not shock me in the slightest.
No.
That might have been a mandate from someone upstairs, just saying.
That's certainly possible. There might be a backstory to that.
He covers Florida State, but got a hunch. Just saying.
He would be a fun guy to get on a show and say, "Can you be honest?"
Yeah. What'd the publisher say? I need to know. And then Sam McEwen of the Omaha World Herald was the other one. And he wrote a ton about it, basically saying Alabama was very, very sloppy, that UCF was undefeated, and they won a conference title, and nobody else could say that.
And he was kissing Scott Frost's ass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Scott getting pretty vocal these days since taking the Nebraska job. He's mouthy.
What's he saying?
He made a comment yesterday about how Saban had 12 games to figure out that Tua was the better quarterback and never did it, but it's impossible to criticize Saban, so oh well.
Does he have a point?
He has a point. There is a bit of kind of know your place, in my opinion, though.
Okay.
Disagree?
I don't know, Chase. And I don't know what you and Jeffrey talked about with the whole Saban thing.
Not a word. So
okay. Ahead. Well, we'll wrap up the podcast, if you don't mind, with some Saban stuff.
Okay.
Chase, they were fortunate to make the playoff.
Oh, no doubt.
They played at Mississippi State, and they won. Could have easily lost. You could make the argument that they should have lost. They scraped by in that game on the skin of their teeth and just by Jalen Hurts running around a little bit, but they couldn't throw the football effectively. And that was how you beat Mississippi State, and everyone knew it. Because Ole Miss turned around, 2 weeks later and beat them with Jordan Tamu and some deep balls. That was how you beat them. Well, you knew if you're Nick Saban that Tua could throw the deep ball and throw it really well. He just won a championship with it. They go to Auburn and got blown out, really. Because I remember watching that game. We were on coach search stuff, and we were doing Matt Luke, Dave Doran stuff that day. And so I didn't pay as much attention to that game as I had intended to because of the way our weekend developed. But I can remember thinking to myself, Alabama's good, but that's not a championship team. That's not a playoff-worthy team. So if Wisconsin beats Ohio State, Alabama doesn't go to the playoff.
Correct.
Well, watching them play with Tua in the second half the other day, I thought to myself a number of times, one of your recruiting pitches at Alabama is, we're going to always recruit great players. The best players are going to play. It's a meritocracy. Well, there's no question who the better quarterback was.
No.
So why did he not play more? Was it to protect Jalen Hurts? Was it to protect recruiting interest in Texas? What was it? What was the reasoning for not playing Tua more, developing Tua, when you're so superior, you being Alabama, to most of the opponents that you play, that you could have given him a lot of starts and developed him throughout the course of the season and let him make mistakes in games where those mistakes are not going to hurt you. I don't know that Saban deserves a pass on this.
No, it's not about deserving a pass. And frankly, it's smart for him because anything Frost does to stay in the news is good, recruiting and kids and all that stuff. I guess that's a good point. It's just, I don't know. There's a humor to it to me, and I get it. He just took UCF and did all that, but there's a humor to me of the Nebraska coach that just went, not him, but the school that just went 4-8, having the national opinion, you know what I mean, on something? Something about that's kind of strange to me. But anyway, and I actually apologize to Mr. Frost. I know we'll be stunned here. Lack of context in the tweet that gave the quote. I just found the full quote, and it was not anywhere near as inflammatory as Sam Kahn Jr. made it out to be.
What a shock.
I know. I'm blown away. He says, let's see. It was a decision that I don't... This is crazy. He took the middle of this quote instead of the full quote. Here's the full quote. Let me give you both real quick. This is great.
Okay.
The tweet, quote, Tua was pretty obviously better and they had 12 games to figure that out and didn't. Said Saban is above criticism and Frost recruited Tua and knows what he can do. Okay? That's the tweet that was quoted.
Which is pretty inflammatory.
Okay. Here's the full quote.
Okay.
Open quote. It was a decision that I don't know I would have been courageous enough to make. That's the answer you want to hear. The other answer is that he was pretty obviously better, and they had 12 games to figure that out and didn't. Coach Saban is above criticism with everything he's accomplished, so I don't mean it that way, but I recruited Tua out of high school and knew what he could do, and it doesn't surprise me that he did what he did. Jalen's a great player, too. That was a very bold and courageous move, and I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier in the season.
Wow.
Jesus.
We wonder why people hate journalists.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it really is. Because that's a very respectful quote.
Oh, no doubt.
Not a mouthy quote at all.
No.
Wow. If I'm Scott Frost, I am livid. Wow.
Oh, we'll close here. I don't know exactly what our schedule is tomorrow. The story below this Sam Kahn quote is how Case Keenum became the improbable face of a faceless contender. I went into my conversation with Jeffrey scared to death about Sunday. I remain scared to death about Sunday. But it is Sean Payton and Drew Brees against Mike Zimmer and Case Keenum.
I know. I told you this Monday.
I know, but...
You have the better coach, but more importantly, you have the better quarterback in a quarterback league.
Jeffrey thinks Case is going to fall on his face.
Well, it just – look, man, I think Jared Goff's a star, okay? I think Jared Goff's a star. I think Jared Goff's going to have a big-time career. I do. I'm a fan. But that first playoff start was what you expected out of a first playoff start. I don't think Case Keenum's going to be a star. I don't think Case Keenum's going to have a long, storied NFL career.
And he's going to have a little more nerves on Sunday afternoon than he had most Sundays during the regular season.
This is his one shot. I mean, Jared Goff walked off the field at the Coliseum, and somewhere in the back of his mind, amidst the disappointment, he said, I'll get another shot at this. I'll be ready next time.
Yeah.
He walked away confidently. And odds are overwhelming that he'll get another shot. I don't know. It's Keenum. And then on the other side, man, you got Drew Brees in a dome.
Minnesota, we talked about this. I don't know if you've heard this or not. Minnesota not even opening the side that they can open because they're worried the pipes will freeze if they do that. So it's completely enclosed. They've made the decision to close it all the way.
Drew Brees gets to be in a dome. He gets to be comfortable. Yeah, it'll be loud and all that stuff. This isn't, to steal an expression from all the coaches that I've covered, this is not anywhere close to his first rodeo.
Yeah.
And he's going to be fine. Minnesota is going to have to outplay the Saints, and maybe they can. But Drew Brees completing 70-something percent of his passes, Kamara and Ingram, and they're comfortable in indoors. Are the Vikings capable of winning the game? Yes. But if you're telling me that I've got to bet one way or the other, give me Drew Brees over Case Keenum, and I'm sure Case Keenum is a wonderful young person, and I'm sure he's great. I want Drew Brees. Drew Brees has ice water running through his veins. And elements can affect Drew Brees, but when he's in a dome, he's damn near automatic. And I just don't think the Vikings are going – I don't think the Vikings are going to be able to stop them. I personally think we're headed towards a Saints, and I dread it because, bless your heart, your blood pressure is going to be out of sight next week. I think we're headed to a Saints-Falcons NFC title game in New Orleans that is going to be epic.
That would – okay, last thing where we close.
I will worry about you all week long.
Because I asked Jeffrey this too, and he gave an answer. Do I root for Atlanta or Philadelphia?
Well, you root for Atlanta because you don't want to go to Philly and it be 6 degrees and the wind howling around, where I do think that impacts Breeze.
Jeffrey said I have to be for Philadelphia.
I disagree.
He said Atlanta is the second most dangerous team after New Orleans in the NFC, and you want to stay away from them and get them out of there as fast as possible.
Well, let me pull up the long-range forecast for Philadelphia. Let's see what it is.
Okay.
We'll it's a podcast. Why not, right? Because I understand what he's saying, and there's no doubt that Atlanta is a better football team. But I have a concern about weather for teams like the Saints.
Okay,
so that would be Sunday the 19th.
Yeah.
Sunday the 21st. Oh, it's not bad. High of 49.
Yeah, but depending on the change, they're predicting potential rain and snow.
Yeah, AM rain / snow showers in the morning, then becoming mostly sunny in the afternoon, high of 49. That night, and there's a decent chance that game would be at night, 34 degrees and partly cloudy. No, I'm cheering for the Eagles if I'm you, if the weather holds up. But if I'm in a blizzard, I don't want to play the Eagles in a blizzard.
No, you don't want to do that.
Although the Saints are a little different this year, they can run the football somewhat effectively.
Well,
but
it's Nick Foles in a blizzard. It's not Carson Wentz in a blizzard.
It's not. And the Saints can run it better. Although you saw a playoff game last week where
Carolina took it away. Carolina did what a lot of teams have not done against the Saints. They said, no, we're going to make Drew Brees take the top off.
And that's almost certainly what Minnesota will try to do.
Yeah.
Take the running game away and get them into third and long and hope that the crowd's loud and that interferes with communication and that Brees makes a couple of mistakes somewhere. But Drew Brees just doesn't make many mistakes.
No. So we'll see. That is Sunday afternoon. Eagles and Falcons is Saturday, I guess. So thanks to Jeffrey for joining us. Neil is still going to be in Chicago tomorrow. I'll be here. I don't know. We'll tell you. I'm talking to Russell about some stuff. There's some potential out there, but I'll update on Twitter and the message board as we move along with our day. Remember, check rebelgrove.com for more, and we'll talk to you soon.